You are listening to the Midcurrent Church Podcast. This week's message is from our series titled, As It Is in Heaven. For more information and to visit us online, check us out at midcurrentchurch.org and find us on Facebook and Instagram. And now, here is Pastor Sten Carlson with today's message.
Josh just sang is actually a favorite song of mine by a not so well-known artist by the name of Steve Moeckler. It's called Holiday at Sea. A personal note, whenever I hear it or play it myself or sing along to it, I can't help but think about my own dad, who, as I shared last week, for those of you that were here, mentioned he's now experiencing his own eternal holiday at heaven. And so I can't help but think about him when I think about this song and sing it along myself. And I'm certainly not wishing away any of my time here on earth, but I know that I will be glad to be there with him again someday. Right? It's part of, for me at least, it's part of why there is so much anticipation for heaven. And I think that's kind of, at least in my mind as I listen to it, I think that's kind of what the song is getting at. The anticipation of heaven and what we will experience there someday. Now, it's not a worship song. It's not like a song, you know, built off of a specific, you know, Bible passage. But as I listen to it, it paints like a really it paints like a really compelling picture of heaven in the future someday, right? This artist, Steve Moeckler, sings over and over again, when I get to heaven, right? I won't be alone. When I get to heaven, I'll understand the pain. When I get to heaven, I'll hurt for those who you know, have not come yet, but I won't hurt the same. Our hope as Jesus followers is that when we get to heaven, that will be exactly what we experience. That's the compelling picture that I think this is painting for us, right? When our hope is that this will be our experience. Right? We'll be in paradise, you know, a holiday at sea, right? There's no more pain. There's no more tears. There's no more sorrow. Our physical bodies will be healed. Our brokenness will be made whole. Our relationships will be restored. We'll be the very best versions of who God created us to be. Right? If that is all what we have to look forward to, or what I have to look forward to when I get to heaven, then I think, like so many of you, I'm going, hey, count me in for that. But here's the question I suppose I want to pose to all of us today. Does heaven ever feel like really far away? I mean, for starters, its location, you know, is always kind of a wild thing to think about. It feels like this whole kind of just, you know, we can't make sense of this in a lot of ways. It's like this whole, you know, other world in a galaxy far, far away. But beyond how far it seems in terms of some kind of like whatever distance, right? It always feels, at least for me, like so far down the line. Now, I know that, you know, tomorrow is not a guarantee for any of us, and I know that we're all at different stages of our own, you know, journey in life, but for the most part, I think conversations of heaven naturally just make heaven feel like some kind of distant future, something that's just so far away. And in my mind, when I think of heaven, it kind of begs the question, like, why does heaven matter now? Right? I think so often we can't describe it. There's so many questions about it. It's like there's this picture of uncertainty in a lot of ways, and it just feels so far away. And if heaven is just like a when, just kind of this thing that we close our eyes and picture down the line, then it's kind of like, well, what do we do in the meantime? Right? If it's just this thing far off then, well, what about here and now? Like, what impact does the future of heaven, or is there an impact? Like, is there a connection? Is there a relationship? But like, what impact does the future of heaven and all the things that this song talks about, all the other things we know about what heaven is going to be like, what impact does the future of heaven have on the present here on earth? Right? It's like, is our life here on earth, is it just kind of like some big waiting game? Right? Are we just kind of like, you know, killing time, you know, waiting for this day that we dream about, waiting for our number to be called? I mean, are we just, you know, is our life here on earth just kind of us twiddling our thumbs, writing our own songs, dreaming about what heaven will be like someday? I mean, that's certainly one way to think of it, as just a big waiting game, although I'm not sure that's what I would suggest for us. In fact, I'm mindful of, maybe you've heard it before, I'm mindful of one of the critiques that has been said of Christians, that sometimes, right, we can be so heavenly minded that we're of no earthly good. You ever heard that before? Like, yeah, Christians are so heavenly minded that they're of no earthly good, right? I don't want that to be true of us, that we're just so kind of focused like, oh, that's just going to be great then, but we kind of forget about, you know, life here now. And so my hope for all of us is that we as Jesus followers, we as a church family here at Midcurrent, my hope is that we would be so heavenly minded that we're of so much earthly good. And if you want to try to figure out what that looks like a little bit more, I'm glad you're here today. This is what I want to try to help us do as I bring a close to this series that we have titled As It Is in Heaven. I want to try as best I can to make a connection, right, between our future hope of heaven and also the present reality in the present day that we live each day here on this earth. Over and over again, the Bible alludes to a similar idea, right? If we just kind of took everything that was said, it alludes to a similar idea about why heaven matters now. And if you kind of boil it all down, it starts to make one thing, I think, most clear for you and me. And so I want to frame our conversation today with one main thought, one big idea, and that thought is this, generally speaking, that thought is this, that compelling pictures of the future determine priorities in the present. Okay, what does heaven have to do with right now? Yeah, that's what we're looking forward to. We think about, man, when I get to heaven someday, that's going to be so great. But what about now? What I want to suggest to you as I begin our conversation today is that compelling pictures of the future ultimately do determine our priorities in the present today. You already, I mean, if we just, you know, looked at our life here on earth, you already operate like this in many areas of your life. For instance, if you have a big dream vacation that you're planning, that you've got circled on the calendar, you know that it's not only a matter of time before you get to experience that big dream vacation. It's also a matter of a lot of planning and a lot of preparation and a lot of saving and a lot of coordinating and a lot of researching and a lot of booking and a lot of reserving, right? Why? Because a compelling vacation, right? A dream vacation somewhere in the future, it determines many of the priorities that you have in the present. It determines many of the steps that you got to take on your way to that dream vacation. The same is true, and this is, I've always said, man, analogies between, you know, have, it's like sometimes it feels so like pales in comparison. So I would say the same is true, if not entirely more true, when it comes to heaven. Okay? Our anticipation for heaven and what we will experience when we get there someday. We sing all songs, when I get to heaven, it's going to be like this, it's going to be like that, it's going to be so good. Our anticipation for heaven and what we will experience there someday, it's not just a thing that we close our eyes and dream about. It's our anticipation of heaven then should have a direct impact on our lives today. That's what I want to try to help us understand, the connection between what we long for, what we're waiting for, and also the life that we're living here today. In order to help make that connection clear, I want to just look at just a handful of passages in the New Testament that are ultimately referring, kind of pointing in the direction of heaven and are kind of participating in just these kind of like, you know, end times conversations in general. The first is in Colossians chapter 3. The author writes this. You see it on the side screens with me. The author writes, since you have been raised to new life with Christ, and I'll stop really quick just to be clear. This is ultimately this opening line. Since you have been raised to new life with Christ, it's just an appeal specifically to those who have placed, to Jesus followers, those who have placed their hope and their faith and their trust in Jesus, right? And when people do that, when people go public with their faith, oftentimes we see that here in church when we do baptism. When people go public with their faith in Jesus through baptism, what we see in that activity itself is that they go, you know, underwater, symbolizing a death to their old self, and then they come out of the water, symbolizing that they have been raised to new life with Jesus, right? And that they too will now have eternal life with Jesus because of what he has made possible for them. And so the Apostle Paul, who wrote this letter to the Colossian Christians, he's saying, hey, since all that is true of you, old life gone, new life, new hope, new future, right? Because of all of that stuff is true of you, here's what he says. Set your sights. Set your sights on what? On the realities of heaven, where Christ sits in the place of honor at God's right hand. Think about the things of heaven. Since you've been death to old self, been raised to new life, new hope, new future with Jesus, set your sights on the realities of heaven. Think about the things of heaven, not the things of earth. Let me clarify very quickly here what he's not saying. Per this conversation that I've started about dreaming about heaven and what we do in the meantime, but he's not saying, hey, just set your GPS coordinates on the fastest route to heaven, right? Avoid tolls. He's not just saying like, you know, lock in the coordinates and make a beeline for it. He's not saying, hey, just, you know, sit around and dream about, you know, how wonderful heaven is going to be someday. He's not saying, hey, just circle that day on your calendar and just, you know, kind of wait patiently for it. He's not saying, hey, go write a song about, you know how it's going to be, what it's going to be like when you get to heaven someday. What he's saying is let the hope of heaven, right? Set your thoughts on the realities of heaven. Set your sights on the realities of heaven. What he's saying is that the hope of heaven should really have an impact on your life today. It should order your steps today. Saying, let the picture of heaven then, that all the things that you know are going to be true, all the realities that are going to be true for us because we have been raised to new life with Christ. He's saying, let the picture of heaven then determine your priorities now. And he goes on, he's got a few things in mind as he says this, right? Let's pick back up in verse 5. I'm gonna kind of rapid fire through a lot of what he has to say here. Listen to this, right? He's trying to paint a picture saying, hey, the hope, the dream of heaven then should have an impact on our life now. So look at verse 5. He says, so put to death the sinful earthly things lurking within you. Have nothing to do with sexual immorality or impurity and lust and evil desires. Don't be greedy, for a greedy person is an idolater, worshiping the things of this world. Verse 8, if we keep reading along, he says, now is the time to get rid of anger. Now is the time to get rid of rage and malicious behavior and slander and dirty language. He says, don't lie to each other, for you've been stripped of that old nature and all its wicked deeds. Verse 12, he's going, hey, since this is true of you, here's your marching orders now. Clothe yourselves with tenderhearted mercy, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Make allowance for each other's fault and forgive anyone who offends you. Verse 15, he adds on, be thankful. And then I love this. He caps it all off. Verse 17 again, right? Because of everything that's been true and promised to you in the future, here's what he says. Whatever now, today, whatever you do or say, do it as a representative of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father. Okay? That's a long shot there. That's a long list. It's a pretty hearty game plan of the way that we ought to order, the direction that we ought to be living our lives. But let me just remind you what precedes all of it, our thoughts of heaven. He's saying, set your mind, set your sights on, think of those things, right? Our thoughts of heaven, our anticipation, our hope of heaven ought to have that kind of impact on our life today. So here's ultimately what I'm getting at. Yes, I'm not saying like don't be excited for those of us who have placed our faith in Jesus. Yeah, heaven is like it's the pinnacle. So I'm not suggesting that there should be no anticipation for heaven. But I think what Paul is teaching here is that the call on our lives and the ultimate invitation to Jesus followers is not to escape this world, but it's to be obedient to God within it. Right? That this is what he's suggesting, right? The ultimate invitation for, it's not just like this kind of like, we'll just sit on our hands and wait for the day that we can just exit, you know, stage left and go on to, that's not the invitation on our lives as Jesus followers. It's not to escape this world. It's to be obedient and to live obediently to God within this world in anticipation of the day to come. In his critique, I love this, in his critique about Christians too often living with their head in the clouds, so to speak, Dietrich Bonhoeffer once said this. He said that Christ does not lead man into a religious flight from this world to other worlds beyond. Rather, he gives him back to the earth as a loyal son. Okay, this is true for all of us, sons and daughters, right? He's saying, hey, the point of all this, right, what Christ has done for us, it's not intended to lead us into a flight from this world, but rather what Christ has done is intended to give us back as sons and daughters to this earth as a representative of his, as a representative of heaven in everything that we do and say, right? Jesus has given us new life and he has given us back to the here and the now so that we would represent him and heaven in every single thing that we say and that we do. 2 Peter chapter 3 gives us a shorter and kind of a more straightforward explanation of the connection, I think, between future glory that we dream of and present reality. The author poses a question to his readers. Take a listen. He says, since everything will be destroyed in this way, and that's a weird thought to drop in on, but it's just a reference to like a whole kind of like end times conversation that he's having here. He's saying, in light of all of this, the author asks a question, what kind of people ought you to be? Okay, in light of what we know is to come, what kind of people should we be now? He answers the question, you ought to live holy and godly lives as you look forward to the day of God and you await. He says, into speed it's coming, as you anxiously await its coming. I love the question that's just being asked here. The author's trying to get an important point across. Sure, that there is a future that we are waiting for, that we are longing for as Jesus followers, right? We have our sights set on the day where there is no more crying, no more tears, no more pain, all this stuff. But we cannot be so future focused that we forget about the call on our lives here and now. And so what I think ultimately we need to understand, this is all of us, Jesus followers, we need to understand that any study, any exploration, any conversation about heaven and the end times, the fancy word, if you've heard it before, the fancy word is eschatology. And there's a lot of significant conversation that can be had within that world about heaven, about the end times, and you know, all you know, the new heaven and a new earth and Jesus coming back, right? All of that conversation is ultimately intended to make us better Jesus followers now. All the conversation about what is to come in the end, what is to come sometime in the future, it is intended to have an impact and to shape how we go about following Jesus now. Learning more about heaven and studying what Scripture says about the end times, it is meant to stimulate Jesus followers to a more Jesus-like lifestyle today. The reality is every single New Testament passage that's referring to the life to come and to the future hope we have, this is the kind of specific and practical focus that it has, how it impacts our living here today. And so with this all in mind, I want to suggest to you something that I once heard long ago. I don't remember who I can attribute it to or where I came across it, but when I read it, I thought, oh my gosh, that's such a good way to think about this life that we're living. And so with this whole conversation in mind, as I start to turn the corner for us, here's what I want to suggest to you today, that Christian hope is not only a destination, but it's also a mode of traveling. Okay, Christianity, right? This thing that we're a part of, some of us are interested in. Yes, there is hope and a destination, right? But Christianity, it's not just about a destination only, sometime far, you know, far away, far off in another, you know, it's not just a destination. It's a mode of traveling. It's a way of traveling. It's a way we go about our life today. I'm not saying that there is no hope or that there should be no hope in heaven as a destination. I just am saying what I hope is that it would be more than that. What I'm saying to you today is that our focus should be, I'm not saying it should not be, I'm just saying it should be less about waiting for when we get to heaven someday and more about living for heaven today. Less about waiting for the day when we get to experience all that. And it's more about heaven giving definition and giving direction to our life every single day. The truth is, this is what I want to suggest to us about the joy and the hope of heaven. The truth is that the joy and hope that we have as Jesus followers, it's not only in the destination. I think it's also in the journey. In fact, sometimes, and this is what I want to spend a minute trying to suggest to you today or paint a picture of this for you with the rest of the time I have. In fact, I think that sometimes great destinations that we have in mind that we look forward to, I think great destinations are just invitations to really great adventures along the way. This has been my experience, if I try to just tell stories about life here on earth to paint kind of heavenly pictures. But this has been this idea that great destinations are ultimately just invitations to, I think, really great adventures and really great journeys for us to live. This has been the experience of my family for many years now. One of our very favorite destinations in the world is a sleepy little vacation town in northern Michigan that sits on the shores. It's beautiful. If you've never been there, it's just amazingly beautiful. This little town sits on the shores of both a local lake called Portage Lake and on the shores of Lake Michigan. It's one of the most beautiful, one of the most honestly picturesque places I've ever seen in my life. If you ask all five members of the Carlson family, each one of us will tell you that the week that we spend there every year, we're about to in just a month or so, they will tell you that this one week, all five of us, we cannot wait for all year long. It's the one week that we dream about. It's amazing. I mean, it's literally like heaven on earth. This place that we go, we don't have to cook for ourselves. We don't have to clean. We don't got to do dishes. We're surrounded by friends and family in the most beautiful place, honestly, you could ever imagine. You'd never know that it's just in a little town in Michigan. We play all day long. We're on the beach. There's a climbing tower. There's a high ropes course. There's a basketball court, a pickleball court, the baseball field. You sit in the craft hall and make. I mean, it's just like it literally is a week where it's like, man, it's heaven on earth. We stay up late, hanging around campfires, s'mores, the whole deal. And we're all going to be there, the five of us, every summer we go, we're going to be there in July, and we can hardly wait. We go every single summer. But I'll tell you what, some of the most memorable moments that we have experienced as a family have taken place on the journey to. There's a drive, right? It's 10, 11, 12 hours. Some of the most memorable moments that we have experienced as a family have taken place on the journey to this destination that we love so much. So some of the best times together have been on the adventure along the way. There was a few years in a row where we took some extra time And we made some pit stops along the drive to northern Michigan. Some, like I said, it's already a 10, 11, 12 hour drive. There were some years where we went out, hours out of our way even to experience new things and to stretch the deal out and to have new adventures. We stayed in some funky places along the way. For instance, I'll take you on a little trip down memory lane here. One year when our kids were young, this was, I don't know, six, seven years ago, we once drove a few hours out of the way, 2-3 hours out of the way to a little town called Onaway, Michigan, where we rented an Airbnb there. The place that we rented, you'll see it on the screen here, the place that we rented was an old vintage camper in somebody's in an old couple's backyard. In Onaway, Michigan, right? Debbie and her German husband, Klaus. Kid you not. Our kids were like, are we related to them? We're like, nope, they're strangers. And so we stayed in this deal, parked in their backyard. My two oldest, Lucy and Oli, they slept on the, you know how campers work. They slept on the dining room, the table folded into a bed. And so that's where they slept for the experience. My wife, Erica, and our 5-month-old at the time, they slept on the main, like, full-sized bed there. And this next picture is hard, I know, but you can see that bed drops down. I slept on, like, a little drop-down bed above them. It's dark. It was a little drop-down bed. It was, like, the size of a diving board. It's like, don't move or you will crush your 5-month-old son, right? This is like, okay, I'm sleeping, you know? So this was our you know, living quarters for the weekend. It's bizarre. We're like, literally, just in their backyard. We ate on their back patio. At one point, Klaus was like, you want the beer with me? I'm like, well, you know what, Klaus? I mean, we're on vacation. You know, it's like, we're sitting on their back patio. We're swimming in their pool. If we needed to use a bathroom, we just walked through their living room like, yes, you know? It was one, I'll be honest with you, it was one of the weirdest and best experiences of my life all at the same time. And the reality is our kids had a blast just hanging out. Their yard, our kids are playing, and we just, everything we were doing, like, we had the best time. We followed that a few years later with a stop at a one-room cabin with no electricity. No insulation and no running water. It was like in the back section of property on some guy's like antique and like scrapyard up near Mackinac Island. It was called Paul's Landing. That was the name of this place. And we went on adventures. I mean, he had like an old scrapyard of old car. We just like walked around his property and we just like hung out around the campfire. Now, I'll be honest with you, this wasn't one of our finer adventures. Paul's Landing is a little infamous in our family when we talk about little adventures we go on. They're like, Dad, remember Paul's Landing, right? It wasn't one of our finer adventures. I think I had the worst, I'm not joking you, I think I had the worst night of sleep in that little one-room cabin that I've ever had in my life. I started with the kids in the loft, and then I joined, you know, and then I was on the floor by the end. I'm like, I can't do this. So it was an awful night of sleep. In hindsight, you know, it might not have been like the safest situation I ever put my family in, sleeping in like some guy's backyard, right? But the Airbnb review said he seemed like a nice guy, so thought we were good. Here's the deal. Everyone thought we were crazy. I mean, when we finally made it to the place where all our family was all these years, everyone thought we were crazy for doing the stuff like this, and maybe we were, but this is still, even Paul's Landing, right? This is still one of my, like, it's not just mine. It's like one of our favorite moments that we've spent together. It's still something that we shared together. It's still something that we laugh about today. The same with the old vintage camper and Debbie and Klaus and all the other adventures we had along the way to our much more preferred destination at the spot in Michigan. And here's the deal, we're not done yet. You'd think we'd have kind of learned our lesson by now, but we haven't. I think it's because we kind of crave the adventure and the experience and the journey along the way. I think sometimes the journey matters to us just as much as the destination. And so in a couple weeks, my wife Erica, she's running Grandma's Marathon in Duluth. It's also a destination that we love. In Marathon, she's done like 15 of them. We love Marathon weekends and we're so excited. She got a late entry into the race. And so we were a little bit behind in finding a place up there. And it's Marathon weekend in Duluth. It's crazy as it is. And this is the 50th anniversary of the Duluth Marathon. So it is just bonkers up there. Every hotel within hours of Duluth is booked solid. There's little chat groups online between the runners. When like a room becomes available, you call to find out that it's already been rebooked, or you find out it is available, but it's a two-night minimum and it's $500 a night. And if you have ever met me and my wife, Erica, you know that is just not something we will ever do in our life, is pay like $1,000 to stay in a Motel 6. Right? We're not doing it, right? We'll sleep in our car before we like spend $1,000 at a Motel 6, right? So we're like, all right, we got to figure out what to do. We put our name on the waiting list to sleep in the dorms at UMD. That's a thing that they do up there. So we're on the waiting list, like crossing our fingers that we got a place to stay. And then the perfect opportunity. I mean, it's like, you know, it's a perfect opportunity presented itself to us. A woman posted on Facebook in one of the little groups. A woman posted on Facebook that in the back of their quirky farmhouse, they had a space for someone to put up a tent and camp on their property. Erica texted me immediately, all excited that she had found a place for us to stay. We went back and forth on the pros and the cons of the tent and the backyard of the quirky farmhouse. I kind of thought our days of sleeping in the, you know, backyard of strangers' houses was over, but you know, maybe we had another go about here. But truthfully, the thing I was most worried about, I'm like, oh, what a horrible night of sleep. I'm like, I don't want you sleeping on an air mattress in a tent the night before a marathon. She reminded me, she's like, Sten, she's done like 15. She's like, Sten, it doesn't matter where, I sleep horribly the night before every single race I have ever run. So she's like, I'm gonna sleep horrible anyway. It doesn't really matter if I'm in a hotel bed or an air mattress. I'm like, well, that is true. You do really sleep horribly every time, you know, you've got a race in the morning. So we're kind of leaning in that direction. Like, hey, maybe this works. And so we're going back and forth, and then she texted me this, and I got her permission to share this. This really sealed the deal for me. She sent me a text, and you're like, you making this up? I'm not making it up. I can show you the text, right? she texted me. She says, here's what she said. She said, I kind of want to go with this option. We didn't know. I mean, we didn't have a lot of choices, but we're trying to figure this out. We had a couple things pop up. She said, I kind of want to go with this option. And then the three little bubbles, you know, popped up and she sent another text to me. Here's what she said. She says, I also love this time with you when we get to do this kind of stuff. And I feel like this will be kind of a fun adventure. Gang, I'm telling silly stories here to try to paint a picture for you. And that is this, that great destinations, I think, are just invitations to really great adventures along the way. And heaven, okay, I know it's hard to conceptualize sometimes. We don't have all the answers we want, but here's what I'm telling you. Heaven is the greatest destination that we could ever ask for. It's the greatest destination that we could ever imagine. But it's not just something that we wait for someday, because man, when we get there, when I get to heaven, it's not just something that we wait for. It's an invitation to every single one of us who has put our faith in Jesus. It's an invitation to every one of us who is living for this anticipation of heaven. It's an invitation to a great adventure today. It's an invitation to reconsider and to readjust how we go about this life in light of it, in light of what we know is coming down the line. It's an invitation to an adventure into a journey that sure will have its highs and lows, that will lead to moments where people like wonder if we're crazy. But I think on top of it all, it will lead to moments that we were designed for. It'll lead to moments that will satisfy our souls in a way that I think only God can. And it'll lead to moments that ultimately will lead to God's glory and to the good of those that he has placed in our path along the way. So my encouragement, right? But the assignment I want to just kind of share with us today is this. We got to learn to embrace the journey, and we got to choose the adventures that most others will choose to avoid. We got to choose the adventure that others are going to say, no thanks. What do I mean by that? Here's a few examples of, I think, the invitation to the journey that we have been called on as Jesus followers, right? We got to choose the adventure, which means this. We got to live for eternal purposes more than just temporary gains, right? Our anticipation of what is to come, it should have a way of making, you know, ourselves most concerned with eternal purposes rather than just temporary things that we might accumulate along the way, right? Some of the most fun I think that you can ever have is when you're serving others and when you're living a life of generosity and when you're sacrificing for the sake of something bigger than you. People will think you're crazy. People will think you lost your mind, but you can tell them, no. I'm not crazy for living this way. I'm not crazy for giving of myself to others, to something bigger than me, to the kingdom of God that's here among us now. I'm not crazy for serving and for sacrificing and living a life of generosity. You just tell them, I'm on a great adventure. I think the invitation to this kind of journey also means we got to make a decision. We got to choose, in light of what we're anticipating, we got to choose to stick out rather than to blend in. Right? Normal is seems to be the standard that most are shooting for. Everybody's just kind of content being like, hey, it's just pretty normal. I've said this so many times. We're all just like, if we're normal, then we kind of feel good. Right? But if you think about it, the reality today is that normal in the world today, it's overworked, it's overstressed, it's overstretched, it's oversexualized, it's overspent, it's over everything. So why in the world would you be satisfied with just going, well, hey, this is pretty normal? Right? Instead, right, we're going to choose to, rather than just kind of blending in, instead, as Jesus followers, in light of what's to come, we're going to set our mind on heavenly things. And because of it, we're going to choose to set ourselves apart, to be willing to stick out for the sake of the call on our lives. Same time, we got to believe, right? This is part of the journey, the adventure that we've been called to. We got to believe that there is hope in hardship. Okay? The world will tell you that, you know, hey, suffering and times of difficulty and hardship, the world's going to tell you, hey, that's just a sign that there's no God. Or if so, that God is not good. But our faith in Jesus tells us that there is more to this life than meets the eye. And so we choose, in light of what we know is to come, we choose to keep our eyes fixed on Jesus, who for the joy set before him, he endured even the cross, right? We have to believe that there is hope even in hardship. And here's the final thing I would say. We got to be, in light of what we know is to come, we've got to be bold in our mission. The world will tell us, the world will tell you, you're too much, you're too religious, you're too old-fashioned, you're too whatever. But I go, man, we cannot believe those lies. We have a light. You have a light inside of you that Jesus wants the world to see, that Jesus wants to light the path and light up the dark places in the world around us. So we've got to be bold in how we love Jesus and how we love others and how we invite others onto this same great adventure. Right? Our hope as Jesus followers, it is not just a destination, but I think it is a mode of traveling that Jesus has called us to embrace today. So let's embrace the journey and let's choose the adventure that he's called us to. Let me pray. God, we give you thanks for the joy and for the hope and the anticipation of heaven, the place that we were ultimately created for, God. We long for the day where there's no more crying, there's no more tears, there's no more pain, there's no more evil, there's no more injustice. God, we long for the day when that is what we will finally experience. But God, as we wait, and whatever that is, God, we know there's no guarantees for tomorrow, and we're all different places, God, but as we wait for that day, as we wait for all the things that, you know, we dream about, God, as we wait for all the things that we dream about when we get to heaven, I pray that it wouldn't just be waiting, God, for heaven, but that it would be us living for heaven. God, I'm praying that the hope and the joy and the anticipation of heaven would give new definition and would give new direction, new inspiration, new encouragement to the lives that we are living today. God, help us to live in a way where others see and take notice of the way that we do embrace the journey, God, and in the way that we are living this life in a way that maybe others wouldn't. God, I pray that there'd be something compelling about the journey that we embrace, the adventures that we pursue, because you've called us to them. And God, we pray that many more might follow in our footsteps and ultimately begin to follow after you. And we pray these things in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this week's message from Midcurrent Church. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Be sure to join us on Sunday mornings, both online and in person, at 9 and 10:30 a.m. Midcurrent is located at 200 First Street in downtown Hudson, Wisconsin.